Right now, I mean, as we speak, a single computer processor can perform a calculation in about 15 minutes.
Just 15 minutes.
Yeah, 15 minutes. That would take our best traditional supercomputers, literally longer than the universe has existed to figure out.
Which is just hard to even wrap your head around.
It really is. It's a certified mathematical miracle. But today, the exact same digital ecosystem that built that miracle, well, it also left the back door wide open for hackers to steal your entire medical history.
Write your DNA, your surgical record.
Exactly, and then just sell it online for $1,000. So, welcome to the Deep Dives. Today, we are looking at a stack of tech news from the Tekken Morning Newsletter.
Dated Saturday, August 1st, 2026.
That's the one. And our mission for this deep dive is to really explore this massive, honestly terrifying contradiction we're seeing.
It's everywhere right now.
It is. We are living through these unprecedented, mind-bending leaps in computing power, but they are colliding headfirst with just a catastrophic lack of cybersecurity.
And severe physical supply chain limits, too.
Yes, exactly. It's like we're building this 100-story digital skyscraper, but
The foundation is actively crumbling underneath it.
perfect way to put it. And when you start connecting the dots between all these stories from the newsletter, from quantum mechanics, all the way down to the video game console sitting in your living room, you get a very clear, very sobering picture of where we are truly vulnerable.
Yeah, you really do. It's the ultimate technological paradox.
Which is exactly why you're here to help us navigate this whole landscape. So let's jump straight into the miracle part of the equation, right? The July 30th announcement.
Yeah. IBM and the University of Chicago.
Right. So they proved something called verified quantum advantage. They used a 70-qubit processor to do this 15-minute calculation that, again, completely outpaces the lifespan of the universe for a classical computer.
Yeah, it's a massive leap forward.
And the applications they're targeting are huge. We're talking about simulating complex drug molecules in a matter of days instead of
Or
decades.
optimizing routing for thousands of commercial flights all at once.
Right. And even actually predicting climate change without having to simplify the global models, which is just, it's mind-blowing.
Well, we've been hearing promises about quantum computing being, quote unquote, 10 years away for the last 30 years.
Oh, absolutely. Always 10 years away.
But this specific breakthrough shifts the paradigm entirely because of one vital concept, and that is verification.
Verification.
Right, it's moving away from theoretical lab noise and into actual proven industrial math.
So the newsletter gets really into the weeds on how they did this using a system called a Qiskit quantum error correction.
Yeah, Qiskit.
And they created 70 logical qubits. The analogy they used really caught my eye, though. They compared a logical qubit to putting a bunch of unstable chairs together to build a stable platform.
That's actually a great way to visualize it.
But I really need you to unpack the mechanism here. I mean, how do unstable chairs keep each other from falling over? And how is this actually different from Google's big quantum supremacy claim back in, what, 2019? Is verifying the math basically like finally getting the answer key to an impossible test?
That is a perfect way to look at it, actually. Let's break down those unstable chairs.
Okay.
So a standard physical qubit is incredibly fragile. I mean, if the temperature in the laboratory fluctuates by even a fraction of a degree,
Just a tiny bit.
right, or if there's stray electromagnetic radiation, the qubit flips, makes a math error.
So that's your chair leg suddenly buckling.
Exactly. Now, in Google's 2019 experiment, their machine produced a massively complex output, but traditional computers were far too slow to actually check if the math was correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some researchers even argued that without verification, a quantum computer might just be generating highly complex, useless noise.
So they had a super fast machine, but literally no way to know if it was just hallucinating the answers.
Precisely. It was fast, but was it right? What IBM and the University of Chicago did was group those physical, fragile qubits together into a logical qubit.
Like tying the chairs together.
Yes, they entangled them.
Hmm.
So if one physical qubit experiences an error, if one chair leg buckles, the other 69 qubits in that group immediately recognize the anomaly.
Oh, I see.
They essentially vote on the correct mathematical state and autocorrect the error before the entire system crashes.
That's wild. They basically crowdsource the right answer internally.
Exactly. And because they achieved this stability, they could perform a calculation where they could mathematically prove the final answer was correct. It wasn't noise. It was verified.
Meaning we can actually start trusting these machines to solve real-world problems.
Yes, finally.
Which is incredible for, you know, drug discovery or climate modeling, like we said. But the newsletter takes a very sharp, very dark pivot right here.
It does. It has to.
Because the exact same world-saving technology that can simulate a cancer drug is also a ticking national security time bomb for our encryption.
Oh, absolutely. The infrastructure protecting your entire digital life right now, your banking, your emails, even classified government communications.
All of it.
It's all built on cryptographic algorithms like RSA and ECC. And these security protocols rely on specific math problems.
Like what kind of math?
Primarily factoring massively large prime numbers or calculating elliptic curves. To a classical computer, reversing that math would take millions of years. It's essentially a one-way street.
Right, because it has to guess them one by one.
Exactly. But a powerful quantum computer doesn't check one answer at a time. It can evaluate vast numbers of possibilities simultaneously.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It will tear through those algorithms in minutes. It will eventually break our current encryption completely.
So every secret we've ever locked away behind that math suddenly becomes an open book to whoever has one of these machines.
Which is why the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, has been in a full sprint to finalize post-quantum cryptography standards.
They're trying to build new locks before the new keys get made.
Exactly. They are set to publish the first official frameworks by the end of this year, 2026. This isn't a theoretical exercise anymore.
No, the clock is ticking.
Every major corporation and government agency has to start migrating their entire security infrastructure to these new quantum-resistant algorithms immediately. It is a race against physics.
But, I mean, if quantum computers are coming to break the unbreakable locks tomorrow, we are in serious trouble because hackers are currently kicking down our standard-issued digital doors today.
Oh, easily.
I mean, we don't even need a quantum computer to expose how fragile our data is right now. You just look at the healthcare breaches reported the very next day, July 31st.
Yeah, that was a rough day for healthcare security.
Just brutal. We have Amgen, right? A $28 billion pharmaceutical giant that produces cutting-edge drugs.
Massive company with huge R&D budgets.
Right. And hackers infiltrated their third-party cloud servers. And they didn't just steal patient data. They walked away with proprietary drug formulas currently in development.
Which is just staggering.
That is billion-dollar research and development just gone. And then there's the CareCloud breach.
Right, affecting over 345,000 patients.
Yes. And that attack happened in March 2026. But the company took 4 months to report it to the public, which is a blatant violation of the 60-day HIPAA notification rule.
Yeah, just completely ignoring the federal guidelines.
Imagine not knowing your medical history was stolen for a third of a year. And the newsletter notes, a complete medical record is worth up to $1,000 on the dark web.
Which is huge.
It's 10 times more than a stolen credit card.
Well, you have to think about the permanent nature of that data. I mean, if a hacker steals your credit card, you call your bank, they cancel it, and they issue a new one.
Right, it's an easy fix.
The stolen data becomes worthless overnight. But your medical history,
yeah,
your DNA profile, your psychiatric records.
Yeah, you can't just cancel your DNA.
Exactly. Your past surgeries, your chronic conditions, you can never change that. You can't reissue a DNA sequence.
God, that's grim.
It retains its value permanently on the black market, which makes it the ultimate tool for identity theft, long-term insurance fraud, or even extortion and blackmail.
Which really makes me question the tech industry's entire architectural approach here. I mean, we are taking billion-dollar drug formulas in our most intimate, unchangeable medical histories, and we're just trusting them to third-party cloud servers.
Yep. Handing them right over.
It feels like taking a 10-ton, impenetrable bank vault door and just installing it on a cardboard box. Amgen specifically pointed out in their press release that it was a third-party vendor's server that got breached, not their own internal network.
Always shifting the blame.
Right. So my question is the cloud technology itself fundamentally flawed, or are we just using it terribly?
It's overwhelmingly a human implementation problem, and it's driven by wildly misaligned financial priorities.
How so?
Well, the source points out that 70% of all healthcare breaches involve human error.
70%?
We're talking about employees falling for basic phishing emails, or IT administrators failing to properly configure the access permissions on those third-party cloud buckets.
Just leaving the settings on public?
Exactly. But we really have to look at the underlying paradox of healthcare technology to understand why this keeps happening.
Wait, I think I see the paradox here. Hospitals will gladly spend millions of dollars on a state-of-the-art AI robotic surgeon, right?
Right.
Because they can put that on a billboard to attract patients and generate revenue, but they won't spend the money to secure the Wi-Fi network that the robotic surgeon is actually connected to.
Exactly.
Because cybersecurity doesn't make them any money.
You've hit the nail on the head. Healthcare teases visible innovation like diagnostics, gene sequencing, robotics as a revenue generator.
Team marketing.
But they treat cybersecurity as an invisible IT expense. It's a cost center to be minimized right up until the catastrophic moment a breach occurs.
And then it's a panic.
Yeah. You have hospitals running decades-old legacy infrastructure that's just desperately patched together with brand new cloud applications. This creates massive blind spots.
That makes a lot of sense.
The industry needs a fundamental psychological shift. Cybersecurity can no longer be viewed as just an IT issue. It must be legally and operationally treated as critical patient safety infrastructure.
Because if a ransomware group locks up a hospital's digital system, the doctors can't access patient allergies, they can't cross-reference medications, they literally can't perform surgery.
Everything grinds to a halt.
The cardboard box collapses and it becomes a literal life or death situation.
And, you know, the vulnerability extends far beyond the hospital walls.
Yeah.
Because think about it, how do doctors and patients actually access those cloud servers?
Usually on their phones or tablets.
Right. They use mobile networks. The invisible airways carrying those stolen proprietary drug formulas and medical records are fundamentally compromised as well.
And this dives right into the 5G security illusion from the newsletter, which absolutely floored me.
Yeah, that report was a real eye-opener.
On July 31st, researchers disclosed 84 critical vulnerabilities discovered in 4G and 5G networks. 84. Specifically, these flaws were found in open-source network cores with a program called Free5GC.
Yes.
The most alarming flaw they detailed allows for something called session hijacking. The source says a hacker can take control of your network session, impersonate you, access your bank accounts, or send malicious data, and the network thinks it's actually you.
It's terrifyingly simple when you look at the mechanics.
But how does that physically happen? Like, how does the network not know it's a hacker?
Think of your mobile device's connection to a cell tower as a digital handshake. When you connect, your phone presents a complex digital ID badge to the network to prove who you are and establish a secure session.
Okay, like showing my passport at the airport.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In a session hijack, hackers exploit vulnerabilities in the network software to essentially clone that ID badge while you are using it.
Oh, wow.
The network doesn't look at the person holding the badge. It only verifies the badge itself.
So it sees my badge and says, yep, come on in.
Right, so the hacker can bypass all the security on your physical phone
right.
because they're exploiting the cellular infrastructure that's handling the traffic.
I am just bewildered by this. Telecom companies spent billions marketing 5G to us as this impenetrable fortress, right? The ultimate secure network for the future.
The commercials were everywhere.
But it sounds like they built a massive high-tech mansion and just left 84 windows wide open on the ground floor.
That's pretty much what happened.
But let me play devil's advocate for the listener here. These flaws were found in open source versions of the network cores. Should the average person actually be worried about their giant commercial mobile provider? I mean, don't the big telecoms use custom, highly secure proprietary software?
You should absolutely be worried.
Really?
Yes, because modern telecoms do not build everything from scratch. To save massive amounts of development time and money, major commercial operators use these exact open source implementations as the foundational building blocks for their commercial systems.
Oh, so they just copy paste the open source stuff.
Exactly. So if researchers found 84 open windows in the open source blueprint, those same windows are very likely built right into your commercial provider's mansion too.
God, how did we get here? How did we end up with a less secure system when 5G was supposed to be the gold standard over 4G?
It's the painful irony of modern software design. The very characteristics that make 5G fast and flexible are exactly what made it vulnerable.
Because it's too complex.
Exactly. Older networks were built on rigid, closed, proprietary hardware boxes. 5G shifted to something called virtualized cores and network slicing.
Network slicing. What does that actually mean in practice?
Imagine taking one physical data highway and mathematically slicing it into completely separate invisible lanes.
Okay.
You create one dedicated lane for autonomous cars, another lane just for smartphone video streaming, and another for hospital equipment.
That sounds great in theory.
It makes the network incredibly efficient. But every single one of those new virtual lanes requires its own software toll booth to manage the traffic.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, they took a closed hardware system and turned it into a massive distributed software network. Complexity bred vulnerability. Every new virtual lane, every new software feature, exponentially expanded the attack surface for hackers.
So what does this all mean for the person listening to this right now? Someone just walking around with a 5G phone in their pocket, sending emails, checking their bank balance?
The immediate practical takeaway is that you cannot trust the cellular network to secure your data by default.
Just assume it's compromised.
Pretty much. Yeah. The researchers explicitly advise using a VPN, a virtual private network, on your mobile devices.
Okay, so that adds an extra layer.
Right. A VPN encrypts your traffic before it even leaves your phone. So even if a hacker successfully executes a session hijack and intercepts your data stream,
they just get gibberish.
Exactly. All they get is scrambled, unreadable garbage instead of your banking passwords or your medical records.
Okay, let's step back and look at the whole board here. Our medical data is exposed on cardboard box cloud servers. Our 5G mobile networks are leaky and full of software holes. But surely the actual physical hardware, the silicon chips powering this entire digital revolution, are keeping up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have quantum computing breakthroughs. We have AI advancing at breakneck speed.
The hardware companies are trying desperately to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
But they have just slammed headfirst into a massive physical roadblock.
Physical limits.
Yes. The boundless ambition of the digital world is finally crashing into the absolute limits of physical manufacturing.
Okay, yeah, we are talking about the global AI memory crisis now, and the numbers from the newsletter here are staggering.
They really are.
According to the news from August 1st, Micron, which is one of the biggest chip makers on the planet, has completely sold out its entire 2027 production capacity for HBM4.
HBM4, high bandwidth memory, fourth generation.
Right. And prices for this memory have doubled in just 6 months because only three companies in the entire world have the fabrication plants capable of making it.
Micron, Samsung, and SK Hynix. That's the entire list.
And the specs they are producing are mind-blowing. We're talking 819 gigabytes per second of bandwidth on a single tiny module.
It's incredibly fast. And to put that into perspective, think about large language models, the engines behind modern AI. They contain hundreds of billions of parameters.
Just massive data sets.
Right. When you ask an AI a question, it isn't just doing a quick search. It is constantly moving massive oceans of data back and forth between the processor and the memory to generate an answer.
So it needs a huge pipe.
Exactly. AI training workloads are incredibly memory bound. It doesn't matter how fast your processor is if the pipe feeding data into it is too narrow.
The source actually quotes NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang summarizing this perfectly. He said, even if you have a GPU, you cannot use it without sufficient memory.
Which is just a fundamental physical reality.
It's like an automaker building a fleet of 200-mile-per-hour supercars, but realizing the entire world is completely out of rubber for tires.
Perfect analogy.
You have this massive roaring engine, but you physically cannot put the power to the pavement. High bandwidth memory is the tires.
Yep.
But if we can't physically manufacture enough of these memory chips fast enough, because, you know, it requires microscopic precision to stack these silicon layers, can't we just write smarter software? Can't we teach the AI to not need as much space?
The tech industry is aggressively pursuing exactly that. Out of pure necessity.
Okay, how?
They're trying a technique called model compression. This involves mathematically pruning the neural networks, essentially trying to teach the AI to be just as smart and accurate while taking up significantly less physical memory space.
Basically putting the AI on a diet.
Right. But software optimization can only get you so far.
Yeah.
So they're also exploring hardware workarounds. For instance, CXL memory, which is a new standard that allows multiple different servers in a data center to share a single pool of memory dynamically.
So nothing goes to waste.
Exactly, ensuring absolute efficiency. They're even looking at using standard SSD storage drives as a backup memory pool, utilizing technologies like direct storage.
But that's got to be slower, right?
It's much slower than HBM4, but it's vastly cheaper, and more importantly, it's actually available.
But right now, today, the shortage is very real, and it is bleeding out of these corporate AI data centers and hitting the consumer directly, specifically in the gaming industry.
The trickle-down effect is massive.
Yeah. The cost of standard PC and laptop RAM has jumped 25% in price in just 3 months because the factories are prioritizing AI chips over regular consumer chips.
Because that's where the money is.
And meanwhile, Sony's gaming division just reported a 40% profit surge, and they explicitly allocated a massive concrete budget for the PlayStation 6.
It's already planning ahead.
Right. Analysts are expecting this new console around 2027 or 2028, and the rumors say it's going to use this exact HBM4 tech we are talking about.
Combined with PCIe 5.0.
Yes, which is basically a massive data highway connecting the storage to the brain to create loading screens that take less than a single second.
Which gamers will love. But when you look at the macro picture, you see this unavoidable collision course.
What do you mean?
Well, you have Sony wanting to build a bleeding-edge consumer console that renders photorealistic, massive open worlds instantly.
Right.
You have tech giants pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into building omnipotent AI. And they are all fighting over the exact same severely limited supply of memory chips from just 3 manufacturing plants on Earth.
Oh, wow. Which means the consumer, the listener, is going to pay the ultimate price.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Because AI data centers have practically bottomless corporate budgets, they will buy up all the premium memory supply regardless of cost.
So gamers just get priced out.
But the trickle-down effect is that upcoming consumer technology, whether it's the PS6, your next gaming laptop, or even high-end smartphones, is going to be significantly more expensive. The physical supply chain simply cannot sustain our current digital ambition.
Wow. Okay, we have covered massive ground today. We've taken a deep dive into the technology landscape of Saturday, August 1st, 2026. And it is a jarring reality check.
It really is a wake-up call.
We are living in an era where we can calculate the impossible using the raw mechanics of quantum physics. We can render entirely photorealistic worlds in milliseconds.
Amazing achievements.
But at the exact same time, we literally cannot build the physical memory chips fast enough to keep up with our own inventions. And far worse, we are trusting our most intimate, permanent medical data to a digital infrastructure with locks that are completely broken.
It brings us right back to that skyscraper built on the crumbling foundation. We are accelerating our computational power to godlike levels, while our basic security architecture, our networks, our clouds, is actively failing.
It's terrifying when you step back and look at it.
And as we wrap up, this raises an incredibly important question, drawing on a specific nuance from today's sources that I want to leave you, the listener, to mull over.
Oh, I love these. Lay it on us. What's the final thought?
Well, the FDA has recently started requiring actual mandated cybersecurity features in physical medical devices, like pacemakers.
Right, because a network hack on a pacemaker can literally be fatal.
Exactly. But as we've discussed today, a ransomware attack on a hospital's cloud software system is just as deadly as a medical error. It stops surgeries. It stops care.
Yeah, people die.
So should we start legally classifying cloud providers and tech platforms as critical life support infrastructure?
Oh, wow.
Imagine a world where a tech CEO is held criminally liable for a data breach the exact same way a negligent doctor is held liable for medical malpractice.
That would change everything.
If the people building these systems actually face prison time for leaving the back doors unlocked, how quickly do you think those 84 open windows in our 5G networks would suddenly get closed?
That is a staggering thought to end on. If the consequences were personal for the architects, the foundation might get fixed a whole lot faster.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us and guiding us through this deep dive. To everyone listening, we warmly invite you to keep questioning the digital world around you, keep looking for those open windows, and we'll see you next time.